I'm going to start with the set-aside prayer. It's October 2nd, 2021. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help me glorify you today by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we finished More About Alcoholism on Wednesday, and I forgot to put the microphone on until we were halfway done, so I, for those who weren't here, I made them stay an extra hour. No. So I've got it on tonight. I'm getting old. We're starting We Agnostics, and we've gotten to the point on page 44 where they're done with the first step in the big book. They have 43 pages in Doctor's Opinion to hammer home one point at the end of page 43 or More About Alcoholism once more. And actually in the paragraph ahead of it, it says the doctors and psychiatrists and all, it says, I have heard there is no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless apart from divine help. And that's what we're going to talk about in We Agnostic, is the divine help that's available to us, that we, without that, there's no hope for us. And it says once more, so they've repeated it over and over and over again. And this chapter is designed to show that the alcoholic, and it doesn't say the new alcoholic or the 30-day alcoholic or the relapsing alcoholic, but the alcoholic. And everybody said they're alcoholic here. So if you're in the room at certain times, you have no effective mental defense against the first drink. That's not good. Does everybody agree? Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So I'm going to read it. I, at certain times, have no effective mental defense against the first drink. Neither myself nor any other human being can provide such a defense. My defense must come from a higher power. And Fred said that his story that he tells about drinking on the perfect day snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that he could do the job himself. Snuffed it out. And I realized that for me to help someone, or for someone to help me, I have to have that last flicker snuffed out. And it's actually in the book, and I'd read this a lot, and I didn't see it. And he needed to snuff out to admit that he's 100% powerless. 100% powerless, completely defeated. And people won't do the program or the rest of the steps until they're convinced of this. And that we need a spiritual defense for a spiritual disease. So now we're going to come to We Agnostics. We Agnostics. And they talk about here that maybe half or more were that this way, but agnostic means those without knowledge of God. And Joe and Charlie claim, I believe it's true, that you can believe in God and pray to God, but until you have knowledge of God working in your life and that God's available to you and you trust God, then you don't have an effective defense against the first drink. Because a defense against the first drink requires a relationship with my Creator, so that my Creator will work in my life. And if I think of going to the liquor store today, it'll say, bad idea, Michael. Not a good idea. Because remember, we all have a curious mental phenomenon on the left side. Let's say it's on the left side of my brain. And we have sound reasoning on the other, most of us. And so I have sound reasoning, I go through the day, but I always have this curious mental phenomenon, which we call the queer mental twist prior to the first drink. And it's always going on. And at some point, when we take the first drink, the queer mental ideas overcome the sound reasoning. Has anybody had that happen to them? So there's no effective mental defense when my curious mental phenomenon comes in. and I give it power. And so the program of AA is to put something between the sound reasoning and the curious mental phenomenon called God that will block it. And so when the curious mental phenomenon comes up, God will say, no, no, bad idea, Michael. And so those without knowledge of God. And if you study scripture, the point of scripture is to know God, is to have a relationship with God and know him. And the big book says, I think it's on, I can never find the page, I'm getting old, but it says you can choose any power you want as your higher power. But it says on page 93, it has to make sense to you. And it's in squiggly writing. The main thing is that I'd be willing to believe in a power greater than myself and that I live by these spiritual principles. So I have to have a power that makes sense to me. And I heard a speaker say it has to be someone you can go to at 3 a.m. or someone you can go to when everything's caving in. And you can go to that higher power and that higher power will be there and hold you and hug you. So in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. So that's why I think it's good for people to read the book, so that they learn something of alcoholism. I think the thing that I noticed a lot through the years working with a lot of new people, they come from treatment, they come in, and they all say they're an alcoholic. And then I ask them, what makes you an alcoholic? And they kind of stare at you, or they say certain things, but a lot of them don't truly understand what makes them an alcoholic, and we're going to talk about that because they're going to review that in this paragraph. So what are they trying to teach you is what you have to, is what you're going to learn. So this book is a textbook. So they're teaching you what they had learned. So they want you to have learned that so that you'll want what they have and do what they did. And so we hope you've learned something of alcoholism. So here's what they hope you've learned. We hope we have made clear the distinction, the difference between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, so that you can understand what makes you alcoholic. And then you have to admit you're an alcoholic to understand you're powerless over it. The first step of the steps doesn't say we admit we're an alcoholic, does it? No, it says we admit we're powerless over alcohol. The first step in recovery, remember, is on page 30, which says we had to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. Until I fully concede that I'm an alcoholic, nothing's going to happen. That's the first step in recovery. The delusion that I'm like other people presently has to be smashed. So what makes me an alcoholic versus a non-alcoholic? It says, if when you honestly want to, now honestly is an important word here, honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. It doesn't say quit for a while, quit entirely. Or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. So the or is an important word. It's used to link two alternatives. So they may be saying that if you have little control over the amount you take and you have the phenomenon of craving, you are an alcoholic. Remember that doctor said, anybody in this room who cannot control how much they drink is an alcoholic. Now you might control it one night or two nights or three nights, but at some point you'll lose control. Most of us didn't want to control it, right, at the end. But then when things got bad, we would try not to or try to control it. Never worked. If you want, you cannot quit entirely. Now, why can you not quit entirely? Because we all have this queer mental twist that tells us that it's okay to drink right before we do it. So willpower will not work. Why? Because my will cannot overcome the queer mental twist, because it's my will. It has to be God's will. Does this make sense? Right before you drink, you don't say, oh, I had a DUI yesterday and I have to go to the probation officer tomorrow. No, it won't work. Self-knowledge won't work. Sound reasoning won't work. And so why do we want that drink? Why do we want that first drink? Because we cannot live in the world sober. A lot of people go to treatment, come back from treatment, they don't understand that alcoholism only occurs before you take the first drink. After you drink, it's just the effects of alcohol on your body. But if you don't take the first drink, you don't have the effects of alcohol. So the problem with us is living sober. Somebody said, son of a bitch, everything's real. And so it's our emotions that are the problem. And our emotions are the result of living a life run on self-centeredness. And when I have a self-centered life, I don't like the script that people are giving me, and they're not following my script. And my emotions build up and they reach a certain level, and my mind says, you need a relief. Now, what did we learn would relieve that? Alcohol or drugs or whatever it is. And when that happens, you have no power over it. Your mind is damaged. And so it says, if that be the case, if that's the case, then here's what they say in the book. And I know it's true for me. I'm suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. I have to conquer alcohol because it has so much power over me. And I have to conquer that because alcohol's conquered me, so I need something to conquer it, and it's a spiritual experience. Now, what is a spiritual experience? On page 567, they have a whole thing on the spiritual experience, but they say the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book. Now, this was put in the book in edition 2, because the first edition, people thought you had to have the Bill W. White Light experience. But they learned from William James that your experience can be educational, it can take time. It says in the big book, we suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Anybody remember that? Suddenly realize, well, when it happens, we realize that there is a power working in my life. And it could be it's different times for different people. And for me, it's almost every day. It says, these terms are used which upon careful reading, now Joe and Charlie make the point that alcoholics don't read carefully, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I have to change my personality. Well, what's my personality? My personality is the way I think, the way I react. And the change has to be from self-centered to God-centered. I have to be centered on God, and that's the director of my life. And if I'm self-centered and I'm directing it, and you're a real alcoholic and you keep going on like that, eventually you will drink. That's what the book tells you. And so the spiritual experience is this relationship with God, which is the result of the steps. Now, you can't buy the spiritual experience from AA. You can't call them up and say, give me one, and I'll give you $10. And they give you a certificate. It's an experience. It's something you experience that happens to you from doing certain things. And what AA says, and it may not be true for you, but if you want to have this experience, you have to work these steps, and they're in order. And when we get to step 10 in the big book, you're in the world of the spirit. Get the hint? You've done the works of step 1 through 9. You've broken down the barriers to God in your mind so that you're now in the real world where God is your director. Then step 10 is, how do I stay in that world all day long so I don't get too far from Him? And if I stay in the world of the Spirit every day, then I won't drink, right? You know, God will be there. And step 11 is how I improve this relationship with God. Living in that world, how do I become more effective in it? How can I carry out His will? How I carry a vision of His will? So we have to understand what we're trying to get here. You want to get your life better when you come in, but you really want to have a relationship with God, and then you'll have peace and joy. we want you to be happy, but happiness is a relative term. It means you like what you see, but we want to have peace and joy no matter what's happening to us, so we can handle any situation. And there are a lot of promises on that in the Big Book. The one I remember is that when my son died, it says if we stay close to him and we humbly do as he would have us, we can handle calamity with serenity. That's a powerful promise. If I stay close to God and he's there, I can handle anything. It says if we can live in a new and wonderful world with God, if we follow his dictates, no matter what the circumstances. So circumstances used to determine how I felt, and then if I didn't like them, then I would drink. But now circumstances are just the way what I see, and then we go to God and say, how do I react to it? See, like if the Chiefs lose tomorrow at 3:10, I'll have to go to God and say, okay, they lost the game, get over it, move on, it's not that important. It seems silly, but I'm usually depressed for about an hour. And last week was so bad, I was only depressed for like 20 minutes, because you can only take so much. So anyway, we're getting off the subject here. So what does it mean? So you have to understand what you're trying to get, and you have to know what's wrong with you, and you have to understand the solution. So here they say, to one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. Well, what they're saying is that a lot of people don't want to hear about God when they come in AA. You hear that a lot. And I've heard that I talk too much about God. Somebody came up to me one day, and I said, well, that's fine. I appreciate your opinion. How's your life going? You know, and some people can do without it. That's fine. But to continue as I am means disaster. Did anybody have a disastrous life when they came in here? I hope so, because when you can see the truth about your situation, that it's a disaster, it's a shipwreck, then you're surrendered by the disease and you're willing to go to any lengths. Now, it says especially if you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So the question becomes, if you read this carefully, when are you an alcoholic who's not hopeless? Are there any such things? Well, they're going to tell you in the next line, but an alcoholic who is not hopeless is one who thinks he isn't. It's that simple. We're all hopeless, but we don't think we are. So here's what they say. And we read it today at How It Works. It says there are those who cannot or will not do this program, those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I heard that for years till I understood what it meant. It sounds really good. Anybody like that? Sounds good. But what does it mean to be constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourselves? You can't see that you have a hopeless case. You can't see it. And here's what they say. This is a great line. I've had very few meetings ever done on this line. To be doomed is not good, by the way, to an alcoholic death, it takes a long time to die of alcohol, unless you're killed in an accident or something like that. But you're spiritually dead for so long before your liver and your body gives out. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. Those are two alternatives. And here's what they say. They're not always easy alternatives to do what? To face. So what they're saying here is that if somebody came up to you and you say, you're going to have an alcoholic death, or you need to live a spiritual life, well, that doesn't seem like a difficult choice, does it? Now, Sandy Beach does this skit where, they have they used to have that quiz show where you could call somebody and answer a question. I don't remember what it was called. And so the alcoholic, they say you're going to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. So they say you get one call. So he calls his doctor and he says, how bad is an alcoholic death? Think about that. But what are they really saying here? is that the alcoholic who's is cannot see that there are only two choices. We have third door. There are always another alternative. I don't want to work the steps, but I don't want to drink anymore, and I'll go to meetings, but I'm not going to do the directions. They can't see that there are only two choices to face. And when you can see that there are only two choices, then you can and will do the program. But if you can't see that there are only two choices, you cannot or will not. Constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. It's a nice way of saying, and they didn't know what it is, but I've seen it, and I've probably lived it, but there are people who cannot see that their situation's hopeless. They just will not give up and be defeated. And it's not their fault. It's just they're constitutionally incapable of that. And that's why 99% of alcoholics don't recover. And it's not something I can do for them. I can yell at them all night. They could have yelled at me. I yelled at Brian. Brian yelled at me, right? We all did it. Mark yelled at me. He's still yelling at me. And they can't see that there are only two choices. Does this make sense? But it isn't so difficult. It says half of our fellowship were that type. I think more than that. And here they're talking about God. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we're not a true alcoholic. Now, somebody who hopes against hope that they're not a true alcoholic is one that's not defeated. It's not that bad yet. They'll go to a meeting and they'll hear people talk, and they're new, and they'll say, you know, I haven't had a DUI, and I'm still married, and I still have a job. You know, you've heard that. Great. What are you doing here? And they can't see that their life is a disaster. They want to still hold on to the idea that they're not that bad. But after a while, we had to face the fact. So they're talking about it's not always easy alternatives to face, and then here they use face again. And they use the or three times. So you might do a talk on the three ors of AA. The first is you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control of the amount you take, to be doomed to an alcoholic death, or to live on a spiritual basis, or we had to find the face the fact that we must find the spiritual basis of life, dash or else. See, the alternatives are getting worse. And so you have to face the fact that you must have a different way of living. You must change your personality. You must change the way you react, or you're not going to be able to quit drinking. It says, our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. But here's the deal. If you can take step one 100%, you don't need to be disconcerted. But if you can't fully concede to your innermost self, and if you can't face the fact you only have two alternatives, and if you can't see that you must find the spiritual basis or else, then you can't take step one 100%. And if you can't take step one 100%, then you won't do the steps. A lot of people come in, they drink again, whatever you want to call that, and then they want to do a better fourth step. I said, I think we need to do a first step. And so, because the first step is the first step. It took me a while in AA to understand that there was a reason for the order, right? First is first. And the first step, it says in the 12 of 12, has to be taken 100%. You can't take it halfway. It says if a mere code of morals or a code of morals, if my code of morals or my better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, I would have recovered a long time. Now, why couldn't I do that? Because it was my code. I was still running the show. It was my philosophy of life. We found that such codes and philosophies did not save us. And here it is, no matter how much I tried, I would say, I'm going to go to work today and not get upset. Anybody ever do that? I'm not going to get upset. I'm going to not react. Never worked. I could say at 8:30, by the time you're there at 9 o'clock, something's already bothered you. We could wish to be moral. That means truthful or ethical. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. Now, I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. In fact, I guess comforted by my philosophy of life. In fact, we could will these things with all my might, but the needed power wasn't there. They're really telling you in these pages, after you finish 43, if you're reading the book by yourself, that you're screwed. I mean, you're basically screwed. And you need to understand that, because to understand you're screwed is the beginning of getting better. You're not gonna win till you know you're defeated. It's a paradox. They call it the paradox of AA. You have to surrender to win. And it says, my human resources, as marshaled by my will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. And that's what I really understood on February 8th of 2002 at 2:30 in the afternoon, that my human resources, marshaled by my will, I was defeated. And it wasn't any one particular thing. It was my whole life. Everything was just, it was bad. And I can still remember how bad I felt. And in fact, I felt bad the first few months. I don't know about you, but it was pretty scary. So the question I wrote is, can you see it if you're new, if you're reading this, can you see this? And here's the thing. This has to be something that you carry with you all the time. And this is why when you wake up, you're going to ask God to direct your thinking. And you're going to invite God into your day, because you're taking the first step when you do that. It says when you wake up on page 86, the first thing you do is think about your day. They say stop right there, because you're thinking about what you're going to do. It says stop. Before you begin, ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Go to God right away. And then step 10 is how we carry God through the day to watch us when we start getting worked up. So it says, lack of power, that's my dilemma. Dilemma is a choice between equally undesirable things. So this is a dilemma. I didn't know how to live a spiritual life, and I didn't want to go on the way I was. We had to find a power by which I could live. And it can't be me. And it can't be like my wife. It can't be, it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Now in the beginning, I think for me, it was Cliff Starbuck. It was Mike Herman here today. People I met in AA, people I walked with, people I went to meetings with. And then it became the hand of God over time. And so God will send messengers if you're at the point where you're defeated, and those messengers will guide you to God. It says, with the desperation of a drowning man, the flimsy reed turned out to be the powerful hand of God. I was drowning, I got a reed, the reed is turned into the powerful hand of God. And you can't tell somebody what that's like until it happens. And I'm gonna shut up soon, you'll all be glad to, and we could talk about that. But it had to be a power greater than ourselves. And here's Stu's favorite line in the book, obviously. Now, why is that such a powerful thing? Obviously, what does that mean? It has to be obvious to you at this point, or you're not gonna do it. You're not done. And here's what the book, if it's obvious to you, then where and how am I gonna find this power? That's a good question, isn't it? Well, guess what? That's why we're studying the book. That's why I felt when Curtis died, I didn't hear God's voice, but the thoughts came to me. I asked God what I should do, and he said, go through the big book, the first 164 pages, in the directions so people know what they can do, what they should do, so they don't have to die at 4 in the morning of a drug overdose. So that's what the book is about, where and how you find the power. Now, where we find the power is in this chapter. And how you find the power, we read at the beginning of the meeting, how it works, the 12 steps, and then how it works and into action. There's all the information you need. If you do that, somebody says, if you do everything in there, every day the rest of your life, you'll never drink. I think that's true. It's impossible to work steps 3 through 11 every day and really drink, because you'll have your relationship with God. Well, that's what the book is about. Its main object is to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. So I don't solve any problems in here. God solves my problem, but I have to allow him to work in my life. And it says that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual. And notice it just says one problem. Now, what is the one problem that the steps solve? Chuck Chamberlain, a new pair of glasses, says we only have one problem in AA. Everybody's wondering what that is. Conscious separation from God. Consciously, in my mind, I've separated from God and live in this world where Michael's in charge. I was there today at 9 o'clock when I yelled, "Don't put those cones back," after we had moved them and somebody was doing it. And I said, "Don't move them back." And I must admit, I was perturbed for about 25 seconds. And, but stop it. And so the solution is conscious contact. I suddenly realize God's doing for myself. So today, if I'm in fear or anger or judgment or something, I know I just need, I'm in the world that I created where I'm running the universe. I don't want to be there. It's no fun. I don't like it anymore. Go back to the real world where God's in charge. And the steps are 10, 11 is how you do that all day long. 1 through 9 is how you get to the place where God can work in your life because you've unblocked him. And it means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. And starting here, this becomes the God book. Up to this point, it's the not drinking book. It's what alcoholism is. Now it's about living with God. And then if you do that, you don't have to worry about alcohol anymore. It's not a problem. So I'm going to stop there and hope this was helpful. I felt like I was saying the same thing a million times, but that's what the book does. Somebody said, the book seems so complicated. It says, no, it says a few things, simple things, 1,000 times. Thanks, guys.